Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
It's been roughly a year since more than $20 million in gold and U.S. cash was swiped from an Air Canada cargo facility at Toronto's Pearson Airport. After months of public silence on the file, police announced sweeping arrests related to the case in Canada and the U.S. I'm Dave Breckenridge, and this is 10-3. National Post reporter Adrian Humphreys joins me to discuss how police made breaks in the case, ties between the heist and allegations of gun smuggling, and what happened with all that gold. Don't forget, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon Music. I'd love it if you could leave us a rating, a review, and tell your friends about the show. So, Adrian, about a year ago, Toronto's Pearson Airport was hit with a massive heist. And you and I talked about this previously, but for those who may have forgotten, tell us about what happened last April.
$22 million in gold and currency disappeared. Now, I know that sounds simple, but that's literally what happened. One moment, the gold was arriving on a jet from Switzerland and brought to Air Canada's cargo warehouse. And then a few hours later, when Brink security showed up to collect it, it was gone. That's literally how this came down to why we know about it.
All right. And then at the time, was there, you know, obviously a heist like that is no small feat, caught a lot of attention, got a lot of news headlines, even sparked some interest in a past heist at Toronto's airport, which you wrote about as well. At the time, what was the,
which
you solved. That's true. That was a great interview we did as well. People can find that one in our archives too. If they want to have a listen, or they can read your piece at nationalpost.com. At the time of last year's heist, was there an indication that police knew who was responsible, or were they still trying to sort out what exactly happened?
Well, we thought the latter. They said nothing. They didn't release any video. They didn't ask the public's, you know, help in trying to find a van or a suspect or a person, or if you saw anything suspicious. They said nothing. And I've learned in the past that means one of two things. Either they have nothing to ask help for, you know, they don't have a suspect's description or a vehicle description or whatever, or they're pretty sure they don't need the public's help. Most people thought it was the first thing, that they didn't have anything to go on and it was going to be a long mystery for years to come. It turns out that it was the second, that they were working away at some threads that they felt this was a solvable case.
So fast forward a year, we get word that there has been a break in the case. We get word of a press conference by Peel Regional Police. What did they announce at their press conference last week?
It was quite a remarkable display, in fact. I mean, they had a huge entourage of politicians and police officials and U.S. Federal agents who partnered with the investigation. It seemed the entire investigative team was on display, along with a very large truck. And as they revealed some of their information, they'd actually made arrests, several arrests in the gold heist. They made a modest recovery, and they had seized and were being had on display the truck used in the heist. And I think many people were quite surprised by the length the investigators went, how they got to this point, and the fact that that this was ended up being sort of a cross-border case with some serious ramifications.
Yeah, I mean, I just in regards to your reporting, you were talking like more than a dozen people either arrested or charged, right? Like, or at least believed to be involved in this. How many people were arrested? How many people have since been charged? And how big a heist was this in terms of the organization of things?
Okay, so we have five people arrested and charged in Canada, and four more wanted in Canada that are considered, fugitive, technically. Now, two of those people that are wanted in Canada have actually, one is a fugitive and one has been arrested in the United States. Because there was a second investigation going on across the border that the allegation is that some of the profits from the gold heist was used to buy guns in Florida and smuggle them back into Canada. And that was intervened in by the United States officials, the ATF there, and they arrested or they have indicted four people. Two of people are accused in both, and the Canada gold heist and the U.S. gun running. And so that's sort of the universe as we know it in terms of charges. There is likely 18 people who have profited from the gold, though. That's what the Canadian police believe. They found these debt lists that divvied up how much money from what they say is the gold heist profits and the division of how much each person gets. There's 18 names on that list.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you write in your piece for the National Post, you mentioned that this was an inside job. There were Air Canada employees who were involved in this. How did police come to identify the suspects? Was it Air Canada staff who were first identified, or was it someone else involved that kind of got the ball rolling on this investigation?
The specific order is a little hazy, but the first significant break in the case, the investigators tell me, was the driver. So the heist was, as it turns out, very simple. A driver pulled up with a truck at the Air Canada warehouse, and he had paperwork identifying a shipment that to be collected. And instead of bringing the shipment that the paperwork said, for some reason, they showed up with this box of gold and U.S. cash, put it on the truck, and he drove it away. So the driver was the first focus as the first known bandit of the gold heist, and he made a crucial mistake. He was dressed with a mask covering his face, you know, like a medical mask. It didn't look suspicious. He had a hat on. He covered up well. He had giant work gloves on. But at one point, to hold the paperwork, he removed the glove from his left hand, and he left behind a fingerprint. And police say that was the first break in identifying a hard suspect in the case. And they had a hit for that fingerprint, and they knew the name of the driver. When they went to try and find him, though, they couldn't find him. What they didn't know was that he had already crossed the border into the United States and allegedly got involved in this gun running. But from there, they started to piece together a network. The second thing that was really looked at was, we all knew, was an inside job. So they started looking at the Air Canada employees very closely. They ended up arresting one and wanting to arrest a second. One of the guys they arrested was a manager at that cargo warehouse. And in fact, the police admitted he was actually the guy that gave the investigators their tour of the cargo warehouse as the scene of the crime when the investigators showed up shortly after the heist. That's, quite the inside man to have allegedly involved in the heist. He later resigned from Air Canada, which is seen as a red flag. And when they went to talk to him, he'd already disappeared. That was sort of a secondary break. A second Air Canada employee that they've actually arrested and charged, he drew it perhaps attention to himself because on his social media, he was boasting of and posting photos documenting this outrageous life of travel and staying at the best hotels and first class airline tickets every month to a different destination, often a couple times to Dubai, which incidentally happens to be a dirty gold hub. Trading hub, and that can't have avoided the attention of the police investigating an airport heist with 22 million still outstanding. So that's sort of the lay of the land of what we know so far.
We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Do we have an indication of how this connects to the gun smuggling aspect of it? Was any of the gold used potentially to, you know, sold off and used to buy weapons that were smuggled? Or is it just a criminal network that's involved in gun smuggling also had its hands in stealing gold from Toronto's airport and potentially other criminal activities?
Probably a bit of both. So the most obvious connection is the driver, the alleged driver in the gold heist was also the driver the Americans say they caught driving the guns back. He's certainly an obvious heist. The Americans gathered some evidence they've included in an indictment that claims that they have encrypted conversations and communications between the driver they arrested in the U.S. and a man from Brampton talking about illegal border crossings and the distribution of cash. The American allegations include mention of sending photographs of huge wads of Canadian currency one direction and American currency another. So they there's very clear connections that second man, the Brampton man, is charged both in the U.S. and in Canada for their enrollment. So there is a certain overlap. The police say, and they didn't quite present the evidence of why, and I suspect it's because of these communications from the U.S., but the Canadian police say they believe that a portion of the gold profits was used to fund that gun smuggling trip, and in fact, this firearms exportation network.
Looking at the gold itself, you know, as you say, some of the gold profit may have been used in weapons trafficking. Was any of the gold or any of the cash recovered? And anything else recovered when they arrested these people?
They recovered a small amount of gold. I mean, a drop in the bucket. They found six solid gold bracelets. They were made to look like cheap bangles, but they were made of almost pure gold. These six bracelets, police said, have a value of almost $90,000, which is, you know, a large amount, but nothing compared to $20+ million of the gold that was stolen. That's all the gold they've recovered. We have a little bit of information to suggest now, and this is my latest story, my latest exclusive on this, is that the airport gold, most of it, police allege, was melted down in a makeshift forge in the basement of a local jewelry store. Now, jewelry stores often have some metalworking equipment on hand or in a workshop, repairing jewelry, making jewelry, forging things. And police say this was believed to be what a large portion of the gold was done. Went through there and melted and forged into and transformed into, you know, other things. They didn't seize the jewelry bracelets at that forge, so they'd obviously been moving elsewhere. And the assumption is, the belief is by the investigators, that much of it has already been transformed and moved, likely internationally. Likely to some of these places internationally that are considered easier transitions for dirty gold to make it into the legitimate marketplace. They also seized some cash. There was about less than $500,000 of Canadian currency found all bundled up in rubber bands, and that's also deemed to be the proceeds of crime. So, you know. There's a significant progress in terms of the arrest and knowing how it was pulled and who allegedly was pulling it. Still a lot of work to do in terms of recovery and finding the gold or the profits from it.
Do we know if the jeweler, the owner of the jewelry store, was charged or has any involvement with the heist or the people connected to the crime?
The There was a jewelry store owner charged, and to be honest, I've not yet ascertained whether he, in fact, was the owner of the jewelry store where the forge was. You know, it seems a logical possibility.
Mm-hmm. So at the end of this, we have, you know, Air Canada employees charged, or former Air Canada employees in one case charged. And, you know, we have a Brinks truck that was supposed to, Brinks was supposed to deliver the gold, or was shipping the gold. Have either company commented on the arrests? What has Air Canada had to say about the fact that the two of their employees were allegedly involved in a crime like this? And then for Brinks' part, are they just kind of happy that this mystery has been solved, at least for now?
Both corporations thank police for their diligence and their hard work in investigating the case. Air Canada confirmed that one of the men arrested was a former employee, and the other one was an employee at the time of his arrest, and that he has now been suspended. They didn't want to talk too much about the details of it because they're embroiled in a civil lawsuit. Part of the Brinks appeal sales pitch for customers is that they guarantee their shipments. If the shipment gets lost, stolen, or goes missing, or they cover the loss. And then what they try and do is then seek to recover it, you know, elsewhere. So they're seeking to recover their money from Air Canada. They blame Air Canada for woeful security. The alleged involvement of inside employees, I could foresee that boosting their claim, and they'll be they're aggressively suing to get Air Canada to pay for the $20 million lost gold, to which they've already probably had to pay out to the people that were expecting it, which I understand is the Toronto Dominion Bank. So at the end of the day, it's a, you know, and this is partly why the folklore and the public sentiment is also often on the side of the gold bandits, because, you know, these are, you know, Swiss refineries and large Canadian banks and large corporations, you know, moving massive assets around the world with, you know, not always taking the best care of them, it seems. So this is where we're left, both from a criminal point of view and a corporate standpoint.
And just looking at the people arrested, we have some people arrested in Canada. There are, you know, charges on both sides of the border. Do we have a sense of what's going to happen with these individuals? Is there a chance that, you know, the driver who was arrested in the United States could be extradited to Canada to face trial for his crimes here, or vice versa, that some of the people arrested in Canada who have charges in the United States could be extradited there to face charges on unrelated crimes?
Yeah, all of that is in the mix for sure. The guy that was communicating with the alleged driver of the guns, he has been arrested in Canada, and the Americans tell me that they are seeking his extradition. The fact of the matter is the Canadian judicial system is not as tough on offenders as the American ones. For starters, the ones in Canada that, you know, I think the most serious charge they face is theft over $5,000, which is the way our criminal code works. $5,000 is a pretty low threshold when you're actually accused of stealing, you know, $22 million. So they've already been, all of the Canadians that were, you know, people that are arrested in Canada have already been released on, you know, with conditions to appear as a trial progresses. And in the United States, the driver that was arrested there, the man that was arrested there as the driver, he's probably facing the harshest penalty of all. U.S. federal charges almost are, you know, 95% successful conviction rate, and they have some serious minimums and outrageously high maximums for gun running and firearms trafficking. So he might be the worst off of all of them. As things progress to trial.
Mm-hmm. And I know we'll be watching this closely as the legal process unfolds in this case. Adrian, always happy to have you on. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate your interest.
10-3 is produced by Sean Knox. Theme music by Bryce Hall. Thanks to my guest, Adrian Humphreys. More from him at nationalpost.com. I'm Dave Breckenridge. Thanks for listening.